Good afternoon for those who have joined us so far. Just give another minute to allow some more of the participants to join us, and then we'll start with this afternoon's session. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Warm welcome. Bear with me one second while I try and click on to the next slide. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rachel Smethurst. I'm the Commercial Director for Northern Europe at CHEP, and I'm also the Vice Chair at the local UK chapter of the LEAD Network. I'm delighted to be here with you all and offer you all a warm welcome to this fantastic LEAD event this afternoon hosted by EY. Just some practical bits and pieces before we start. Please go ahead, activate your audio through your computer if you haven't done so already, or use the phone dial-in. All participants will be on listen-only mode for the first part of the session, but we do want you to interact, so please go ahead, use the Q&A button to submit any questions, use the chat to share your thoughts, etc., and please do participate in the polls that we've got running this afternoon in this session. It is going to be recorded, and there'll be screenshots made available along with the recording shared via the LEAD Network communication channels. So just before we start the webinar, I'd like to draw your attention to the antitrust statement. It's the policy of the LEAD Network to strictly comply with all applicable antitrust laws. As we do have employees from competing companies participating this afternoon, we must ensure we avoid any prohibited topics, some of which are listed on the screen right now. Okay, so just a quick note on the LEAD Network, conscious that there may be some new members here today that haven't joined us previously. So the LEAD Network is all about helping to attract, retain and advance women in the consumer goods and retail sector in Europe. And we do that through education, leadership and business development. There's some numbers on the screen. We have over 9,000 members, 37 partners, 200 volunteers across 8 chapters across Europe. And a very warm welcome to any new members joining us today. We're a non-profit volunteer-led organisation that is by the members for the members, and as I said, today's session is being hosted by EY on the super relevant topic of the future of hybrid working and its impact on inclusivity, so really, really important for us this afternoon. So in terms of agenda, as you all know, COVID-19 has had a huge impact on where and how we work, both through periods of lockdown and as and when restrictions have lifted and changed and lifted and changed again. So during this webinar, we're going to look to explore and share perspectives on the adoption of hybrid working as the new normal, what's working well, what isn't, and also the impact on the workplace becoming more inclusive and what the future might hold. We're going to start off with a keynote speech by Joe Adrus, who's going to join us from EY. Then we're going to move on to a moderated panel. And then we're going to end with a Q&A session and look forward to a really interactive, interesting session this afternoon. So big thanks to Joe and a big thanks to our panel for joining us as well this afternoon. We've got Fabiana Pierre-Silva, CIO of Kraft Heinz, Lynn Rattigan, COO of UK and Ireland EY, Devyani Vachampian, CEO of HR Tech, and Jason from EY, who I'm going to hand over to right now to kick off the session formally this afternoon. Big thank you to everyone joining us this afternoon. Enjoy.
Thank you, Rachel. Good afternoon, everybody. And could I add my welcome to that of Rachel's? It's my pleasure to be hosting this panel, this discussion today. As Rachel said, my name is Jason Lester. I'm EY's UK partner sponsor for the LEAD Network and a partner in our consumer products and retail team here at EY. As I said, it's my pleasure to be hosting this session today on the future of the hybrid workplace and its impact on inclusivity. Later on in the session, we're going to have an interactive panel with Lynn and with Fabi and with Devyani. There's an opportunity to post Q&A, which I'll remind you of as we get into that panel. But before we get into that, I'm going to hand straight over to Joe Odris from our People Advisory Services practice, who's going to warm us up the panel discussion and for our Q&A. So Joe, why don't I hand over to you?
Thank you, Jason. I'm not quite sure about the description of warming us up, but hopefully it will do the trick. I'm just going to share my screen so that hopefully everybody's got visibility of the presentation that I'm going to use for today's session. So yes. Brilliant, thank you. So I guess probably should do just a very quick intro to myself. So Joe Odris, as Jason said, a partner in our People Advisory Services practice here at EY. Just as a very quick overview, I'm very passionate about creating work experiences where we get closer each day as we go through work to finishing work feeling healthier than when we started. And I appreciate that is a lofty aspiration for all of us, but I like to think that's an aspiration to work towards. And for me personally, and I think for many others as well, I think one of the key enablers for that aspiration is hybrid working. And I'm looking forward to exploring that with you through both my keynote and then later on the panel discussion that we're gonna have today. So let's start with the hybrid. So I was as you do for these sorts of things. I did a little dictionary definition of hybrid and had a quick look. And it's very much it's a thing that's made by combining two elements or composed of different elements. And I think in terms of workplace hybrid, what do we mean when we talk about that? I think there are many definitions out there, but the one I tend to use most is about how are we combining those elements of safety for our people, of productivity for our organization? How are we making sure we're combining that digital connection to create those work experiences that will motivate us, that they will create belonging, they'll provide support for our people, and they'll help develop purpose. And although that's a fairly short statement, I think there's quite a lot in there. So I thought maybe if we start to unpick some of that, I'll first by thinking about how hybrid contributes to those outcomes. And then what I'll do is I'll start layering in how do we ensure that we can enable inclusivity within that hybrid workplace. Obviously, it wouldn't be a keynote if I didn't have a few polls in here to keep you on your toes. So I'm just starting with a poll in terms of have you adopted hybrid working in your organization yet? So we'll just we'll see how that plays out. Hopefully that'll be nice and easy for everyone to put their poll. It shows if you're paying attention, that's for sure, always good. I think we can safely say that we've got an unequivocal yes that's coming up there. And I think it's no surprise that so many of us, in fact, the majority of us, almost all of us, are adopting hybrid. But I think what's useful as we tend to sort of share these ideas is it's quite nice, isn't it, to start to explore where are we heading with those and what do we mean by hybrid in our own individual organizations. So if I just move that out of the way and move on. So where were we two and a bit years ago now, isn't it? So I'm just going to spend a few minutes reflecting on, well, how did we get here to this conversation about hybrid? So pre-pandemic, little picture here, a normal commute for many of us into the city, normality, our lives being very much about working in the office, probably feeling as if you've kind of nailed flexible working if you're managing to fit in a school run, maybe you're squeezing a workout into the day, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm doing quite well because I work from home on a Friday. And you're sort of sitting there going, you know, yeah, I'm quite flexible. But I don't think now, if we look back, that many of us would have said, oh, actually, yeah, that was hybrid working. So moving on, March 2020, COVID-19 and the pandemic, certainly for us in Europe and the UK. And within a matter of weeks, we were part of the biggest experiment in the world of work. So we were all working remotely, or at least almost all of us working remotely. You know, we were on the sofa, we were on the floor, we were in the kitchen, we were with our kids, we were with our pets. Many of us have got more pets now than we had at the beginning. And we were all sort of thrust into this very different scenario. And I remember being on a call, a sort of leadership call within my part of the EY business about 3 days into lockdown. And we were lurching from kind of, how do you run a workshop virtually? How do you do this stuff, you know, and be engaging and inspiring and motivating to, oh, yes, that's when it began. We were, you're on mute, our favorite phrase, you know, a bit of the new vocabulary. And, but then again, we were all a bit like, well, you know, it's probably going to be over in a month, and you know, we'll probably go back to how things were, and we might have learned a few things from this, but you know, things will just go back to the world before. And of course, the reality is we got quite quickly incredibly used to actually working in this virtual work. And so I guess 2 years on and a bit, what have we learnt, and why are so many of our organisations now talking about hybrid? Why is this session so interesting to us? Why are we investing substantially in hybrid? And I guess we learned quite a few things from our big work experiment. So we learned that we do miss each other. And I don't necessarily mean that in the way of, you know, you missed your friends, you missed your family during lockdowns and the pandemic. So I'm not talking about that, but we're realizing that actually we're not as productive in certain scenarios when we work alone or remotely. And guess what? Some activities, they really do require multiple brains and building on each other's ideas. And there's quite a lot of studies around this at the moment towards innovation having really struggled during lockdown due to a lack of opportunity for that in-person collaboration, because collaboration drives innovation through a better definition and understanding of the challenges that we're innovating around, because of course we bring together different people from different backgrounds and different skill sets. And when we physically bring people together, it really does spur new ideas, creative ideas. It creates that momentum and energy for change that we just find very hard to duplicate, replicate in a virtual environment. And it's interesting about when we talk about collaboration, actually collaboration isn't all about agreeing. Collaboration is about being challenged. And it's actually easier to challenge in person than it is in a virtual environment. So there's those elements in terms of needing to come together and collaborate to innovate. And I think one of the other things we've learned is technology, and I know we're going to hear more about that as we move into the panel, but without suitable technology, hybrid is really really quite a dreadful experience. We're going to look at that in a moment in the next poll. And of course, we have discovered that our employees really do know what they want, and they're making sure that their employers know what they want. And a number of surveys out there, I mean, we've done a employee experience survey across a really broad range of employees and employers. And 54%, for example, said, well, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to resign. So, you know, and we talk about the great resignation. And so we really have been pushed into reasons to invest in hybrid, bring hybrid into our organization. So, you know, we really want to give our people the flexibility and the experience they want. We want to maximize their productivity through the technology that we provide. And we want to provide those collaborative environments in our offices. And no surprise, we are, as employers, we are racing, I think, in some cases, to build and install and pilot these hybrid working opportunities. I'm just going to move into another poll here, which is, have you attended hybrid meetings either remotely or in the office where the people in the office couldn't actually get the tech to work? So they're probably all in a room together and they couldn't get the tech to work. So they all ended up connecting separately. They all went off to their own desks and their own meeting spaces, and they connected separately through those. So you basically ended up with everyone working virtually, but some people taking longer to actually get logged in than others. So it'd be interesting to see whether there's a few people with that have had that experience. I suspect some for sure. Okay. So what have we got here yet? So 80% saying yes, they've had that experience. And I think it's fair to say that experience is hybrid not working quite so well. And so we're doing a variety of things. Now, this is an example of, this is Google, who I think many of us, you know, look up to and perhaps aspire to, just in terms of creating experiences, hybrid experiences that feel very real and very productive and effective, regardless of whether you are the person who is working remotely and connecting in, or whether you are the people who are in the room. So we're certainly seeing a lot more of these appear. Certainly for us in our EY office in London, I've had the delight and experiment of exploring our own hybrid work floors over the last few weeks. I think I've seen Jason walking by a couple of times, and we've all really started to grapple with how does it work, and is it right for us, and their pilots, and you know, I think we're all going to see kind of what comes next. So a little bit about kind of what is this hybrid that we're all grappling with, but what does that mean from an inclusivity perspective? So we're kind of getting to grips with this flexibility and hybrids, and we want to create optimal productivity, but we want to ensure our people are safe, that they're physically well, that they're psychologically well, but we're wanting to make sure we retain our talent, recruiting and developing new skills. How do we make sure that we've got inclusivity wrapped up into all of that? Quick question, another poll, which is really very much, have you changed any of your policies yet to support hybrid working? And the options here are, yes, we certainly have. No, but we probably will, or, you know, we're thinking about it. And then, of course, no, and you don't actually think that there'll be a need to do that to enable hybrid and inclusivity to coexist. And I thought this was quite interesting, just because there are a few different organizations I know that have, but equally there are some organizations that I know that haven't yet got there. Okay. So slightly over halfway in terms of yes, you know, we've already started to do this, but then the rest sort of thinking we're probably going to need to focus on this, but we're not actually quite quite sure yet what that's going to look like. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to ask you to kind of take, I'm going to take you to a place of hybrid and inclusivity working really nicely together. And then I'm going to do a sort of slightly different scenario where it's perhaps not working so well. So I'm going to share a couple of sort of day in the life ones with you. So here we've got the, you know, I get up, but rather than jumping straight into the shower and rushing to catch a train and arriving in the office really early for my call with Australia, I'm actually quite chilled because I get up and I do a bit of yoga and then I walk the dog and then I have my healthy breakfast and then it's great. You know, I'm on the phone to Australia and feeling pretty good about my day. And so I'm on the phone for maybe half an hour, my call finishes. And then I'm like, right, time for the school run, something that I used to squeeze in every now and again. And actually the school run's great because I'm able to have a really helpful conversation with my daughter. And actually that feels important to me, particularly at the moment, because she's got quite a few things that are worrying her. And, you know, a lot of her worries have come about because she's gone through the pandemic experience and homeschooling. And so that's been quite challenging for her, but it's really good that I get that time with her. And so then I come home and I'm able to spend a couple of hours uninterrupted. And I'm really focusing on a new idea that's sitting in my collaboration space in Teams. And actually, I've had a really great experience through COVID because I changed my job about halfway through. And I'm now working for a US tech company. They, you know, they really pride themselves on offering flexible working. And I think I've got like the dream role because I'm working in the innovation hub. And we're working at the moment, our project is about making, you know, quite radical changes to the supply chain. As a result of COVID, we've really had to think differently about this. And I have to admit, I do sort of catch myself sometimes and I'm thinking, oh, I'm such a relief working for a company where I can really make the most of my strengths. You know, I'm a curious person, I'm a creative person, and it's brilliant that I'm getting the chance to do that rather than maybe previously I was often worrying about with my curiosity and creativity, you know, do other people perceive me as somebody who doesn't necessarily fit in with the people I was working with. So, you know, I feel things are going pretty well for me. And I go into the office just once a week, which is when we run our live workshops. And I've noticed there's a really good range and diversity of colleagues. And we've really focused on neurodiversity. And we've got somebody who's, you know, very openly comfortable with talking about the fact that they've got they were diagnosed as a child with autism, but they've never, you know, never necessarily felt they fit in. Another's, you know, very open as well about saying, I actually have found it really hard to come back to the workplace, physical workplace, when the government lifted restrictions, because I've got incredible anxiety. And but there are still people who are attending virtually because they've got doing some elderly caring responsibilities. And so I feel like we're in an organization that really enables us to work together effectively. Even though we've got kind of a quite diverse set of needs. And I also have to admit that although I do really like working from home, it's actually quite nice to go into the office and meet some of my colleagues face to face. I really, I'm really impressed with how accessible it is. And so, I know I've got a real sort of positivity. And the other thing I've really noticed is that I now have a bi-weekly connection point, short connection, but bi-weekly time with my team leader. And at first I thought that was a bit weird because I was like, I don't speak to my boss like twice a week. That's on a one-to-one. That feels, you know, that feels like an awful lot of talking to my boss, but it really has helped just in terms of really clear expectations and feels really valuable. And I don't feel I'm being necessarily missed or skipped over. So, you know, I do feel that I've got a really positive post-COVID back to work hybrid experience. And then here we've got a different image where it's a different story. And so I get up, I drag myself out of bed. You know, I'm sort of thinking to myself, I can't actually believe it's possible to be this exhausted. So even before the pandemic, I can't remember being this tired. But pre-pandemic, I didn't have a child with as many emotional issues. And you know, I could get them off to school without tantrums and tears. And to be honest, by the time I now sit down at my desk, you know, I make sure I don't have any meetings before 9:30, but it's always 9:31 by the time I actually, you know, sit down at my desk. And I'm sort of basically, by the time I even start work, I feel like I've run a marathon. And I try quite hard not to envy my husband, who's been able to return to the office 3 days a week. And he says he can't afford not to, because if he's not seen, he won't be considered for the head of department role that's coming up. But I'm kind of feeling like we've taken a significant step back in the last couple of years. So, you know, still working at home for children, got dealing with elderly parents. A very good friend of mine's got a compromised immune system and is very anxious. And then I think about, well, I don't think about very often, but if I do think about my own kind of career conversation, I haven't had a career conversation for two years. I've got no idea what my opportunities for progression are. And just feels like every day back-to-back virtual meetings. And I suppose, to be fair, I suppose the positive out of it is at least I look at people in the office and I think, well, you know, at least I get out for a run at lunchtime, and that's good. And I did manage to get out this week, you know, to watch one of my kids in their performance. And then I sort of think to myself, but although I'm doing that and that's great and that does feel good, I still got as much work to get through, and I'm just trying to fit everything in. And I head back to my desk at sort of about 9:30 p.m. and I'm not really sure why I'm bothering. I don't feel motivated. You know, no one notices me anymore. I'm not on the in crowd. I don't feel particularly loyal to my organization, but I really don't have time to look for a new job. So you get the drift. You've got kind of, and I appreciate that what I'm showing is the sort of two extremes around the inclusivity element connected to hybrid. But I think we can probably all relate to elements in both of those day in the life of, and you know, we're probably all, certainly we'll all have employees who are at different levels experiencing those different things, and we'll be wondering how to deal with them. So I thought maybe just as a final poll question here, which is, as you're going through this process of or have gone through this process of designing your work environments, how much of your time were you actually spending on planning to ensure that you were bringing inclusivity to life? So just a few different options here in terms of some different numbers for you to select. I feel like this poll is going to be very interesting, because all the others, I sort of thought I knew what the answers would be, whereas this one, I'm really, really not sure at all. So hopefully we'll get those results up. Okay, so we've got a real spread in terms of this poll, in terms of sort of 39% not spending even up to 10% on that, then between 10 and 25. But we do have people who are spending, you know, over 50% of their time really, really focusing on inclusivity. So I suspect that might be something we might want to explore a little bit in the panel, but I think some really interesting reflections from all our different chapter members who've been able to join us today. I'm just going to wrap up with this final set of pictures here, which is a sort of, it's a bit of a top tips, I suppose, in terms of the things that I really think are important for us to get right in being able to bring inclusivity and hybrid workplaces together. And I think it's not about treating everyone the same, is it? Inclusivity, as we see on the bottom right there, it's not just about treating everyone the same. But I think it's really important that we remember that. And I think it's really important that we take the time with our leaders to develop our leaders to really understand what it takes to create psychological safety and to really understand and hopefully be able to remove proximity bias, you know, in terms of the people that we see are the people that we pay attention to and focus on. I think, you know, that trust element is so important, that if we have a lack of trust, then and a sort of discomfort in speaking up, we lose so much loyalty, we lose our discretionary efforts. I think it's important to take time to really think about what it takes to run a well-organized hybrid meeting. You know, it's very different from a well-organized face-to-face or a well-organized virtual meeting. What does it really take, both from a technology point of view, but also from an organizational point of view, to run a really well-organized hybrid meeting? And how can you have sort of difficult conversations and healthy conflict in the hybrid environment? So I think that whole piece around our leaders being feel comfortable and capable of operating in the hybrid environment, in those elements, I think it's critical to spend more one-to-one time with your team, get to know their needs as well as their aspirations, their boundaries, their non-negotiables, help them form those. And for me, that's very much about going beyond what's written down in terms of policy. It really is getting on the same wavelength as your team. And I'm a big fan of getting the team to be part of the decision making in terms of how we decide to do things, and often coming up with exceptional solutions to hybrid challenges. You have to be really organized. You have to be clear in advance about key dates and locations, dates and holidays for certain different groups, really well thought out agendas, particularly if you're breaking out into smaller groups, and some are in the room and some are not. Make sure you're setting time aside in your own calendar for your focused individual work, and help members of your team, you know, be able to put that time aside as well. And then I think my final call out around how do we set ourselves up for success is very much around invest in technology, and not just technology, but technology support, so that when the people who use the intuitive technology can't use the intuitive technology, then, you know, there is actually easy access to support. And I think other elements of technology, you know, bringing to life things like organizational network analysis to really understand the connectivity in your organization, and using your technology to just a little bit like that Google picture, but bringing together so that even if you're not in the room, you don't feel like you're just this little dot on a screen far, far away. So a bit of a whistle stop tour from myself there in terms of hybrid and the sort of layering on of inclusivity, or the inclusion of inclusivity. But hopefully through both what I've shared there and the polls as well, we have been able to generate some good questions. And I will hand over, I think I'm handing over back to you, Jason, in terms of bringing the panel to life. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, you are indeed, Jo. Thank you very much. And very much enjoyed listening to your session there. I was taken by your day in the life of comparisons, almost extremes, and what a reminder it was of how people's experiences and preferences have really varied over this sort of pandemic period, from remote to hybrid to some the former face-to-face physical meetings. It also caused me to reflect on gosh, how quickly everything changed. Yeah, it all moved super fast, isn't it? And it's going to really set the scene for the panel discussion that we're about to have now. So before I get into introducing the panel members, can I just, as a reminder, say, please, please do drop your questions into the Q&A function. I know we've got one already. We'll keep picking them up as we go through the session. So please use that Q&A function throughout. But I'll start actually now by introducing the panel members. Maybe a brief introduction to start with before we get into some of the more detailed aspects of your role. But if I come around from Lynn to Fabi to Devyani, starting with Lynn maybe. Lynn, why don't you introduce yourself and why don't you give us a little bit of something on the personal side about how you experienced the pandemic, maybe something you did that you didn't have a chance to do before.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Jason. So I'm the Chief Operating Officer for EY in the UK and Ireland, and I've been a partner for over 20 years and doing this role for about seven. So I'm really excited to be part of this panel conversation. There's lots that we can explore together, I'm sure. But for me, one of the joys of the pandemic actually was getting a dog. So I'm one of many people who had a lockdown puppy. Up until lockdown, I had withstood my 12-year-old daughters on a daily basis asking me for a puppy, and all of the things that I would throw out as to why it wasn't going to work for us suddenly all seemed to go away during the pandemic. So we are now the proud poor parents and poor siblings of Wilf the Whippet, and he is a joy and a decision that I would have absolutely regretted had we not had the pandemic, because he's a joy to our family. So
fabulous. Thank you, Lynn. Fabi, why don't you say hi, say a little bit about your role, and also anything that you did learn or were able to try new during the pandemic?
Sure, thank you. So Fabi Silva, I'm the CIO for Kraft Heinz International. International for us in Kraft Heinz is everywhere but US and Canada, and much like Joe, I do have the calls at perhaps 7 a.m. with New Zealand. I just don't do yoga before I start them. The one thing that I took during the pandemic is, I'm not a major fan of sports, but the thought of being almost trapped inside home, I say I need to do something. So I rented a rowing machine, and I end up finding there is a rowing studio in New York that had classes that you can do online. So now I'm a keen rower at my my office as well. So quite interesting. I definitely would not have taken this up if it wasn't the pandemic. So yeah, and I'm trying to keep up with this, but very not as eager as I was perhaps in the beginning of the pandemic. Yeah.
Next step onto the open river, presumably then, Fabi, is
yes,
it?
Yes, I should, because I don't live very far from things. But yeah.
Thank you. Devyani, why don't you say hello as well and just give us a little bit of a what did you enjoy during the pandemic? Perhaps you had more chance to do than you didn't before.
Right. So just very quickly about myself, I've had a 31-year career as a group HR director or a senior HR director in large FTSE international businesses. Been very international, live in the US, China, Singapore, Europe. I now am the CEO of an AI and digital innovation hub around the future of work. In a way, I would say almost a bit visionary, because I set it up 3 years ago, and clearly the pandemic has created a huge, huge level of interest in what we do. But going back to your question about, what did I learn or experience, or was either pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised? I think from being in a place where I was in a plane most of the time before the pandemic, to be completely alone at home, because my kids have left home now, was a huge change. And I was surprised at how quickly I learned to enjoy it, not just put up with it, but enjoy it. And more importantly, I think my lifelong ambition of doing some yoga and meditation in the morning, I could seriously start on that. So to the extent this week, I think I'm out in the city three nights in a row and it just feels too much. So I think getting back to normality is also taking some effort now.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Let's transition then to a few thoughts from the panel. I thought we'd start by maybe actually getting into some of the commercial practical challenges as we moved into the pandemic, moved away from, the world before the pandemic to remote working and then evolved to hybrid. And then we can drift into the conversation more specifically around the impact that that's had on, or this has all had, on our collective desire to create the even more or an even more inclusive workplace. Maybe I'll turn to Lynn first. Lynn, you mentioned in your introduction that you're the COO, Chief Operating Officer of EY here in the UK. I can only imagine, like, knowing COOs as I do, that means you get a lot that falls on your desk that needs to be looked at, sorted out. So perhaps you can try and simplify what your role involved as we entered the pandemic, and maybe build from that and tell us a little bit more about some of the big challenges that you had to address to start with.
Yeah. So so I suppose that there's a couple of things to say. I guess the like many people in the audience, and certainly from little snippets of conversations we've already had as a panel before the call started, you know, I think the shock nature of the pandemic, whereas, you know, one day the world was normal and the next day it wasn't, you know, was quite a pivotal moment where all of a sudden, when Boris made that press conference and he said everybody needs to stay at home, overnight, you know, we were trying to get 17,000 people from EY working at home almost immediately. And, you know, I think having done, you know, been a partner of Jason, as I said, for 20 years and this role for 7 years, I thought I'd seen everything, but I hadn't. And so, you know, I think firms like EY, and I'm sure, you know, many on the call, I think we're good in a crisis, and we definitely were good then. You know, the teamwork all starts to come into play, all different people with their different roles and responsibilities across the organization, suddenly all trying to, you know, problem solve to the same thing, which is how are we going to make this as smooth and as an experience as possible to set people up for success in a working from home environment. And I think very quickly, that the two lines of conversation that we were having, and arguably they've continued really through the pandemic and out the other side, was, you know, very much a focus on our people's health and well-being, coupled with, you know, the practicalities of setting people up with kit and goodness knows whatever else to be able to successfully, you know, access their colleagues and work from home. But I think the focus on health and well-being, which, you know, I was involved with as much as the commercials and the practical, you know, needed a lot when they were working from home, was they needed to see people. They needed familiarity, to see faces they knew, hear voices that they knew, and to be reassured that they were still part of this you know, this great big firm that they'd loved and that they'd enjoyed joining, and that they were still very much part of something. But, you know, an all people call probably a week into that pandemic. And actually, you know, the keynote for that were two people, actually. It was a psychologist and also somebody that was very much into health and fitness. Just coming onto a call like that, talking about how to look after oneself. And we've heard those two very stark sort of day in the life of that Joe, you know, so eloquently painted a great visual picture for us. And we had to cope with all of that. How can we give people permission to leave their desk? How could we give people encouragement to actually go outside, get some fresh air? But also, it was more than that. You know, people were living on their own. They needed connections with their teams. How could you bring people together in a way that was meaningful for folks and was additive to, you know, some of the days that they were having themselves as family and pets and all those other things that we've spoken about? So a real focus on health and well-being, which was in a way sort of turning one's agenda upside down, because I can imagine and remember being part of all people calls before the pandemic, and it would have been a very traditional agenda. Let's have a chat about what's going on in the world, but let's have a talk about how we're getting on financially. And all of a sudden, bang, the most important thing that we are talking about is people's health and well-being. And I think that's one of the positives, actually, of the experience we've all had, which is that is still very much now a central axis in a way that it was probably secondary before. So I think that's a good thing that's survived the pandemic. And then I think on the commercial side, there were probably more positive surprises than there were adverse surprises commercially, because, and I don't know whether that's just a phenomenon of being part of a professional services firm, but our market was very buoyant during the pandemic and has remained that way. And so for us, productivity suddenly was going up in a way that we'd never imagined or planned that it would. And actually, that's been a transition for us as we've come out the other side of the pandemic, thinking about, you know, what's the more normalized level of productivity then? Because we've been joyed for 2 years, you know, almost like sort of 100% productivity from a lot of our people, which we know is unsustainable. You know, travel costs went down, and we're a big traveler. Our people are big travelers. Travel costs went down. And they were replaced by, you know, more IT hardware that was needed, you know, investments in technology that Joe has spoken about, you know, but net net commercially, there were more upsides than downsides. And actually coming out of this now is trying to get back to a more normal level of commercial outcomes. But I'd say health and well-being, a key feature for us, which has continued, Jason.
I think we'll come back to that. There's a couple of questions in the chat, Lynn. Mm-hmm. So hold that thought for a second. We'll come back and get some more views on it. Let's turn to Fabi. Fabi, in your role as CIO, Chief Information Officer for Kraft Heinz International, you must have been in the front line of some of the tech challenges, tech questions, tech evolution that was required to allow your business to move from where it was pre-pandemic to remote and onwards towards hybrid, I guess. Could you tell us a little bit more about how you approach that and how that tech landscape has had to evolve?
Yes. And well, luckily for us, we implemented Teams like 2 months just prior to the pandemic. And it was like the best thing that we've done, quite frankly. Before, we have a suite of applications that you could choose if you want WebEx or you want Skype calls and what was happening. So by having a single one, and then we trained people prior to them being at home, that was, I wish we could take, I don't know, some crystal ball that we had, but I don't think we'll be able to do something like that before. But more importantly than that, is we had to adapt very quickly to Teams is not working as it should. It becomes a major disaster. And I have the president calling me and trying to explain, is Microsoft wild that is happening right now? So it's not something that is only us that experience, and it all hands on deck all the time. But what we had to do, quite frankly, was to actually quickly evolve in terms of the collaboration tools as well. So just having Teams there is not enough. So do I have all the capabilities of Teams to be able to use whiteboards, share experience, deal with bigger groups, smaller groups, training people on the fly, having a better experience when going through that? Do I have the reliable network? Do I have concerns of security? We have to also look at that, because now people are not sitting in their office anymore in our own networks. They are perhaps doing that from their own homes, and we don't know the quality of the internet they were there. We had some locations where we actually send some dongles to people to be able to have better quality of the internet that they would have access to, and we would have to control that. So it was an evolution. We were fortunate in the sense that we had a collaboration tool that was well established and trained, but we had to work very closely with our partners during the pandemic to ensure that training was there, people know how to use, the experience was well, keeping our ears really on the ground in terms of what is your experience? I think perhaps Joe mentioned, or even Lynn, that do you know how to use the technology? Is available, but is it really intuitive? Is it really that user-friendly? And now as we are coming back to hybrid, and I know that we're going to explore that a little bit more, is how do I keep this sort of a level playing field that we had when we all were tiny squares that we were talking to, and now a bunch of people are now sitting in an office, and some of us are still the tiny squares working from home. So what new technologies are there? What experience of cameras? How do I evolve my meeting rooms to account for that? That's what we've been dealing with now with our partners and ourselves with the HR teams in terms of even policies, etiquette that we do that. But yes, fascinating on this one.
And we'll come back to that, I think, Fabio, and in terms of, you know, how is it that, what have you all done actually with advising clients or within your own organizations to try and get people focused on creating the culture of inclusivity that perhaps came a little bit more naturally when you were in the same room? So hold the thought, we'll come back to it. Deviane, if I could turn to you, you mentioned that 3 years ago, it was a genius move as far as I can see to set up the business that you did, the HR Tech Partnership. And you shared with me when we spoke last week that you'd spent quite a lot of time working with your clients and teams on helping them embed a new set of leadership skills to work through the pandemic. Could you share a little bit more about that?
Well, just to describe what we do, we source and scan and source AI and digital solutions around the softer aspects of people management, so leadership, culture, engagement, inclusion, feedback, coaching, mentoring, etc. And our offering is we offer clients, so we understand what the people issue is, we match the right solution, and we program manage a 3-month pilot for them. That's all that we do. And so we are very led by client needs. Now, clearly before the pandemic, our typical client were really the large organizations like Kraft, for example, who had a well-oiled HRIS or a machine working, but were using us more to see what's ahead. Now, it's interesting, the moment the pandemic hit, for the first couple of months, everyone went into freeze mode. And I think Lynn described it very well to say the immediate concern was not all this. It was more about how do we get our people to work from home and the basics, such as laptops and providing them with stuff. But very quickly, I think it then kind of, it's almost a bit like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So that then the immediate focus became, they were, recruitment still needed to happen. And so how could they use our hub and AI solutions to hire remotely, or virtual onboarding suddenly became really important because it was no longer being in the office and doing orientation induction. Subsequently, I think as the pandemic went on, the focus then moved to well-being, mental health, for example, using AI digital solutions to enhance mental well-being or physical well-being, but similarly training. And then interestingly, I think everyone started realizing that the pandemic and was going to be a little more longer term. Then the focus shifted really to culture. And we had actually two kinds of clients around culture. There was one group that said, we really have a very strong culture or had a strong culture. And when everyone was based physically together in the office, and our concern is now, with everyone being with remote working going on for so long, we're going to lose it. So how do we keep employees connected and engaged? And there was a second group of clients who now were actively involved in digital transformation of the business model, and then who realized that they also needed to upgrade or make sure that the workforce capability, skills, culture, mindset was also then enhanced. So from a culture perspective, I think the need that stepped up was really around those two areas. It's a bit like a journey. I'm saying this is our ideal client. And today the emphasis is very much, I think there are three things. The first is with hybrid workplace now firmly in place, a lot of corporates are realizing that people management needs to be turned completely upside down. I'm talking about the software aspects. So yes, you may have people in the office, but you can't guarantee that teams and especially team leaders and the teams are going to be together for all the things that they did. Like I said, feedback, coaching, mentoring, just the recognition, reward. And so I think the assumption is that all this has to be done remotely and then supplemented by face-to-face rather than the pre-pandemic era when the assumption was it was first done face-to-face and then technology would support it. Now that's quite a big flip that is happening, and clients are beginning to understand that and prepare for it. I think the second area that I see a lot of organizations now focused on much more is first level manager capability or middle manager capability. I mean, typically management development used to be focused on senior managers, high potentials, but I think that in a hybrid workplace, the biggest pressure is now going to be on first line managers and middle level managers who are not that experienced, who don't have the years of experience and yet who have very large teams. They have to come to grips with, and unless it's supported through the right tools or through the right development, you're going to have a risk there. So I think this is really the beginning of a big shift, a journey. But I do see organizations beginning to understand quite quickly. And I think Jo pointed that out in her initial presentation, that these challenges, there's an opportunity, but there's also risk that if you don't support your teams with the right tools, with the right technology, the fissures may kind of, or the cracks may show up a little more. So I think you have to start thinking a little differently around this area now.
Okay, thank you, Divyani. Let's turn a little bit to the topic of inclusivity. And I guess what I'm keen to try and tease out is some practical examples of where any of you guys on the panel have, and your organizations have made real interventions and had to make real interventions, do things differently to try and promote and encourage a greater degree of inclusivity in our day-to-day working at the team level, the individual level. So just trying to explore some of those. I'll come back to Fabi for a moment. Fabi, you mentioned when we spoke last week that whilst you've been at Kraft Heinz for a while, you actually transitioned roles during the pandemic to a brand new team. And as a result, I think you experienced something that a number of people did during the pandemic, which is joined an organization, but never got to enter the office or meet people for like months and months and months. So that was the challenge you faced personally. How did you go about trying to deal with that?
Yeah, you're right. So I was before on the Global Business Service Organization, transitioned to IT 4 or 5 months into the pandemic. And although my team would be distributed anyway, typically I would have hopped into a plane and then get to talk to people and having those discussions. So I think what was incredible is how open the team was in terms of knowing that all the conversations will be through Teams. And from my end and from my team's perspectives, let's try and establish the relationship on a personal level more than just diving straight into I'm your new boss and tell me about what are the projects that you're doing and whatnot. So really spend some time to understand what it takes as human beings. And how open and incredible receptive they are in understanding that that was a tough situation because I would have to make that transition and not knowing for how long I would be there. So that is one. I also experienced during the same time one person in my team that exit the organization. And I thought I had to double head. So again, I need to really tap into a broader network that would be much easier have I had this established that before. But the reception of the team acknowledging this is a challenge. So how do we enable you? How do we sort of lend you their own network that I could tap on and then having those discussions, I think was fundamental for me to be able to be successful on this one. But there was this element, and I think that Viviane and Lynn, you touched upon that, is that we are now in a position that you truly care when you say, how are you doing? Right? Not that we didn't before, but you sort of expect that the conversation would be a 15 seconds. And now we open time in our own agendas to understand what they are connected and understand how that make a difference in your work life. So that was part of some of my personal challenges. And I have to say big thanks for the team that welcomed me because they were incredible in this aspect. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else got any reflections on that same point? But go on, Lynn, I can see you've raised your hand.
Yeah, no, I was going to do a really, really simple, just share a very simple experience that I had a couple of weeks ago, which to me sort of really brings to light this whole, how simple things can make the difference actually to feeling either included or excluded. And I was sort of reflecting as I was listening to, you know, a lot of these comments. So I think when we were like pre-pandemic, we're all together. You kind of knew the rules of the game because, as you say, it was in person and then the odd person might be, you know, on the phone probably. You couldn't even see their face. And then we moved into the pandemic world where, for the most part, we're all virtual and the rules of the game sort of emerged and they emerged quite quickly and quite clearly. And I think hybrid working is actually harder where you've got some people in a room and some people on a you know, on a screen somewhere. And I was reminded, and I hadn't really thought about that before because we've just morphed into this sort of this new language and hybrid and we're all pivoting, you know, all these little words that we use. What does it all really mean? And I was due to host an annual judging panel, which I've done for the last 10 years with some people I sort of broadly know, but I didn't know them very well. And we were all supposed to be in More London Place, you know, the first time we're all coming together in 2 years. But guess what? We couldn't all make it. Some of us were, you know, some of us had COVID and were dialing in. And we ended up with like 7 people in the room and 7 people on Teams. And first of all, what I observed quite quickly was no one was in charge. So I was the host, but I was virtual. There was nobody from my organization and the EY was the host physically. So they're using our offices, but there was no EY person in the meeting. And what I observed was that from an EY perspective, typically, certainly in the meetings I've been in, when you have a combination of hybrid, so of virtual and people, virtual and in person, you've usually got somebody in the face-to-face room that's got a laptop in front of them. Because what I observed was happening was that all of the people in the room had completely forgotten about the people on Teams. Because, number one, the TV in the room was so far away from the table where the people were talking, they'd completely forgotten they had a TV screen in there, and not a single person in the room could actually see the chat. Mm. And it got to the point where I felt responsible because I was the person that was supposed to be hosting. I knew that my fellow teammates on Teams were feeling excluded because some of them had had three or four goes at making comments and they weren't being heard. And in the end, what I ended up having to do was shout on Teams and say, "Can anybody hear us in the room?" And then they all stopped and looked and said, "Yeah." And it was a little bit like that. And I said, we can't really interact with you in the room. Could somebody have a laptop, please, so that you can see the chat?" And as soon as I said that, and the laptop and us became part of the meeting in the room, life was so much easier. But it was such a simple thing, not thought through, because I didn't realise it was all going to be a problem. But I learned so much just from that one single experience about people that are inside your organisation, outside your organisation. What do you need to be a success in the room? What do you need to be a success out of the room? And I think I'd have been perfectly capable of running an all physical meeting. I'd have been perfectly capable of running an all virtual meeting. But the minute it was hybrid, it was like, wow, okay, we haven't rehearsed any of this, have we? And it was like, I learned so much from that just one experience. And a lot of that was all about inclusivity. Simple example, but really powerful.
Deviani, I don't know if you've got perspectives on this. There's a question in the chat that we got here about from Christine, who was just coming back to something Joe said about proximity bias and how much easier it is to connect to people around you. And the question's really, how do you recognize in that as a risk of hybrid or flexible work situations? What advice would you have to organizations and individuals on how best to deal with that?
Right. It's a pretty broad question. And actually, Lynn, when I was listening to you, I was thinking I've actually had a very different experience. So I sit on the board of the Law Society, and what I found is it's still a mixed meeting, but being physically present in the office, it's a huge big room, and there was just one camera for the whole group. Mm-hmm. Whereas the ones who were joining virtually had their own, and actually it was far easier to get noticed and participate if you were virtual rather than very interesting. So I think the point is, however, is that there's no fixed rule. I do think though what it needs is slightly different skills from the leadership now, probably, which were not needed as much earlier, and that's really, I think, being empathetic, being open, and being innovative, because it's not about what used to work. It's not about the formula that will work. And unless you have leaders who are far more, not just empathetic, but focused on communicating and making sure that connection is there, you are going to find that the element of inclusivity is not going to be as strong. So we're already seeing that in senior leaders. I think the emphasis is shifting as much to soft skills now as in hard skills. Mm-hmm. And I think from a diversity perspective, I do think there's a great opportunity to bring in diverse candidates, whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's sex, or it's whatever, because I think that is also going to create a greater awareness of how do you do things and how do you really engage people rather than the assumption about how things are being done. I don't know if I've answered your question directly, Jason, but...
It's very helpful. And I suppose I'll turn to Fabi next and just to pick up a couple of other questions. A couple of questions coming in about this point around health, safety, and employee preferences. Not everybody's comfortable coming back into the office. And we have, of course, an obligation to ensure absolutely the health and well-being of all of our teams. Yeah. Just wonder how you have approached that at Kraft Heinz as you move to try and encourage hybrid working away from remote.
There were a couple of things that we've been doing. On the onset of the pandemic, when we had obviously employees going to the plants, we start having the scanners of temperature and then trying to get that to really digitalize that experience sooner rather than later. When we started last year already introducing some pilots of hybrid, we also launched some like the hot desk concept, which we didn't have before in Kraft Heinz, probably very common to you guys in UI. But you would be able to then look into your app, where am I going to sit, who are my cohort that are sitting with me, who is going there. In some countries, depending on the legislation, have I done a lateral flow test to be able to be there as well, so enable some of those. Here in UK, in the Shard specifically, when we were starting to launch the program of going back to the office, we had the concern around how do I ensure that if it's hot desk, I'm touching things that someone else is touching and it is really clean. So we end up with the employee kit, which is their keyboard, their mouse, and they have their little lockers where they can put that on the end, at the end of the day. So we have some elements that we were trying to balance as well. So it's a combination of the technology itself, which is the physical hardware. Now it's yours, so you can take it home if you will, but it's a bit cumbersome, so you have your own space. We still have the temperature check at the front. We still have the hoteling desk if you want. But more importantly, it wasn't an IT for IT, let's see what fits. It's let's have a conversation, sort of design thinking really in the employee with the center and talks to a giant and what would work. In some instances, it didn't. We had the same hoteling that worked well in some countries, others not so much because the offices were not there yet to take the to be separated and you knowing where you were. So I think those are some elements that we've done. Also, what would be encouraging that I think it's incredibly working well is moments that matter in terms of being in the office. So when you are there, there is a reason to be there. And then functions have been really encouraged with the moments that matter. That is how you're going to discuss marketing or finance or IT. So we are back. The moment that matter for us is Tuesday as a function IT that we are there together. But the other day, it really depends. If someone in my team is working with marketing, they might decide that they want to come on a Thursday because that's when the marketing is there. But there is a sense of purpose. And lastly, if I may, one thing that we work pretty hard, but is still sort of, is not across our international, but some offices, is that it has to be a delightful experience when you're in the office that you feel like, will be really great. The space is great. The screen that you are working is a big curved monitor that you will not have at home that you can work through as well. The collaboration spaces or tools that you have available are great. So you feel like it's joyful to be in the office. You take some time out of there. And going back to some of the discussions, is joyful, but some of our colleagues are not here. So what is the etiquette, the protocol? How do I get that involved? What collaborations tools that I'm using that we are sharing a PowerPoint and someone that is sitting outside is the actual person that is working, manipulating that. So we ensure that, again, this level playing field between being at home and being in the office is maintained.
So, yeah. Very good. In a minute, Devyani, I'm going to come to you with perhaps the toughest question of all. So I'll give you a bit of notice about, so what happens next? What are the future trends that we should be thinking about? But I'll bridge to that by coming to Lynn first, actually, in terms of looking at it from a business perspective, from an EY perspective. And again, it's quite a tough question, but do you have a view as to whether hybrid working is better for EY as a business than when we're all in the office together or when we were all remote? Have you got a view on that?
Well, I was very taken, Fabio, by what you said about these moments that matter. I love that phrase. And you might find me adopt some of that language. I love that because the word we've used, which is a sort of, it does make the same point, but it's just not as emotively captivating as your moments that matter, which is, I think, offices will become collaboration spaces. And that's really what EY has been all about in terms of coming out of the pandemic and thinking about people will use our office spaces very differently. And therefore, what we need to do is we need to market the space to people, which is a little bit what you have said, Fabi, that you were doing at Kraft. And I feel the same in EY. We've got to give people a reason to want to come into the office. what's in the office that they can't get at home? Well, it's access to people, to the social interaction,
yeah.
you know, to everybody's sort of, you know, energy and inspiration that you just get by being physically proximal to each other. So I think collaboration spaces that promote, you know, all of that inspiration and energy that we love so much about being to work, that's what offices need to be. And yes, you need some quiet space to reflect, you need some quiet, you know, you need some quiet space to get on with some work, but I think it's going to be a completely different experience, and the things we do in an office are going to be very different. I think there is little point in coming back into the office and spending all day on Teams. You know, we've all missed the point if we do yeah. that. So I think certainly from an EY perspective, and you heard Jo talk about, you know, she's experienced some of the things that we've been doing at EY, and I suspect, Jo, what you're talking about was the Living Lab, which is on level 3 in More London Place. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, it is a bit of real estate, but it's kitted out completely differently to a working floor. It's interesting to be in it. You know, it's very much more interesting and more inspiring than working on a floor that's just simply filled with a few meeting rooms and a couple of desks. And it's designed to encourage people back into the office, encourage them to collaborate, whilst also accepting that there's a lot of technology that they're going to need to use while they're there. How can we make the spaces inclusive? And we need to learn. We've got no idea how people are going to want to work in the future. We have to have a go, put something in place, and constantly be learning from our people and ourselves about what works and what doesn't work. And we have to be very quick, I think, and flexible to change things if stuff doesn't work, as we really lean into what is our life going to be like now post-pandemic. And that's going to take, personally, I think that's going to take a good few years to actually settle down into some kind of new norm.
Yeah.
It's a great segue to the question I promised for Devyani. We'll go into this one, and then we'll try to do a bit of quick fire and catch some of the questions that have come through in the Q&A function. Devyani, so back to that question, how do you see things evolving?
So I think, you know, a key word is going to be employee experience. I mean, I know it's been used in the past, but I think the whole meaning and how important it is going to change dramatically. And I want to go back to what Lynn mentioned about flexibility and Jo mentioned about innovation. And I think organizations that truly combine flexibility with innovation have a much better chance of creating the right employee experience. Now, let me give you a very recent example. Citi has recently announced that the business analyst team, they're going to create a separate subset at Malaga. Now, the difference is traditionally they've hired in Frankfurt, London, and New York, and they will do that with starting salaries of £100,000. But the team in Malaga is meant for people who want a work-life balance. They will be paid half the amount. They've been very open about it, £50,000. But they won't be expected to be work in the evening or over the weekends. Now, on the face of it, it would seem as if it's a bit condescending. You're creating a tier two organization of people who probably may be labeled as not very, you know, ambitious or go-getting. But the reality is there are a lot of smart people who are very clear that they still want a work-life balance. And Citi, as long as they give it enough thought, make sure that they're not treated as second-class citizens, make sure that there's enough career planning or trajectory for them, it's really going to be a win-win for both, because the attrition they've been having due to burnout of employees can be stopped. They're still getting a high caliber of employees at half the cost, and they're going to be able to retain these people for a longer time. Now, this is the kind of flexible, innovative thinking that organizations now need to approach towards employee issues. And so the first trend is going to be flexibility and innovation. And again, to go back to what Jo said, technology, but it's really about the data and analytics. It's not just about deploying technology, it's being smart about getting insights, smart about being predictive about things, and therefore understanding what's the right use of your spend rather than doing it blindly. And then all this underlying all this, sorry, very important a topic close to my heart is culture. We've all seen culture's been important, but purpose and inclusion has to be strong drivers of culture. And again, leaders who are able to do that are going to be far more successful.
Brilliant. Thank you, Devyani. Right, to try and do a few quick fire ones, though, some of the questions that have come through. Is a question come through, are we encouraging our employees to be in the office for a set number of days? So I think it'd be good to get a quick fire, yes, no, yes, no. And also, if anybody's got any builds on, how did you arrive at the set number of days if you have landed on that. So I don't know, Lynn, I'll come to you first.
Yeah. So we've got a concept of anchor days. So each bit of our business has chosen a day where they're encouraging everybody to come in that day to collaborate and connect. And, you know, that's been working quite well so far. We need to check in and see whether, you know, that's something we need to continue with.
Fabi?
Similar. We started last year with 3 days a week, but we are reviewing that. And it's not a one size fits all to all the BUs. They are different. Like China is working probably even more when they are not on lockdown. Some less. But it's really around the moments that matter that I say, which is perhaps the anchor day. That is your function day. And that's where we are really encouraging people to come.
Evgeny, what about your own company, the HR Tech Partnership?
We are a small team. We're completely virtual. We don't meet face-to-face at all because we have people all over. But I would go back to saying, do also think, what's your business? Does it really need people? How much of it does it need? Rather than blindly going by what others are doing. And I know of technology organizations that are 100% virtual and are effective, and there are others who probably need employees to be on site 3 to 4 days. So again, I think you need to understand what your business is and then react accordingly.
Thank you. It's a question on have any of you or your organizations implemented any additional support for employee resilience, mental health and well-being through the pandemic? I think, Lynn, you were nodding. I think you mentioned it briefly, but so I think the answer is yes. But anything in particular you think has been really valued by your employees, heavily used?
I can go ahead, perhaps.
Yeah, go ahead.
A couple of things that we did in Kraft Heinz. One was training of managers. Really, which makes a difference. The other one is a hotline. The other is the mental health SOS. So a couple of employees actually volunteer and say, I will be the mental health SOS person. So people can know either it can be from the function or not. So they receive very specific training to deal with the SOS element, to then move to specialized psychological support. But I liked the fact that it's widespread. And before there was this sort of we don't talk about it. There is this almost taboo. And clearly it's not what is happening in Kraft Heinz. I'm very proud to be part of an organization that deals with that so openly.
That's good.
And having those tools. One is obviously the qualified tool that you can call, but training people to be there for others and people volunteer and taking this up made a major difference that the employees are quite happy with that.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to jump to another question while we're still in this sort of quick fire mode. One for Lynn, then for Devyani. Lynn, there's a challenge back, actually, or not a challenge per se, but a good, really good question built on our conversation around anchor days or encouraging people to be in the office, which is probably best summarized as well. Yeah, we're encouraging people back in the office, but we obviously are not going to penalize those who don't feel comfortable coming to the office. But how do you deal with those that are outside? And, you know, what advice would you have for teams in terms of making sure that people aren't clearly penalized, but accidentally left out or excluded?
I think it's an interesting one, isn't it, that one? And I think throughout the pandemic and sort of post that, EY was always taking its marching orders from what the government advice has been. And so we've come close a few times to thinking about, should we be mandating people to come in? You know, because obviously the occupancy levels ebb and flow. They ebb and flow for lots of reasons. They ebb and flow with, you know, the spikes in the different viruses that come along. They ebb and flow just for normal holiday periods and tube strikes and other things. And we've never quite got to the point where we have gone to mandating people to come back into the office because of that fine line between wanting people to feel safe, and everybody's got a different sort of definition of what safe is. And so we very much at the moment, you know, left it to teams, you know, to groups of individuals across the organization to determine what is going to work best for the clients that we are serving, because we've got to, like many people on this call, you know, we are serving clients and have to be respectful of their own cultures and their own ways of working and respectful of our own. So what is going to work for each individual team? And it's very different, I think. So we haven't ever mandated that people must come in. You know, we've encouraged, we've made things safe. But I think to your point, Fabi, just being a bit more respectful and understanding that people might have different points of views, and fear is one of those things that needs to continue to be, you know, considered, whilst also appreciating that one's got a business to run and clients to serve. So it's always that tightrope, I think, that you're trying to walk here.
Okay, thanks, Lynn. Got about 2 minutes before we have to draw to a close. Deviani, I'll give you a choice if you like. I was interested in this, the comment was made about how some people have thought innovation in a hybrid world, certainly remote world, is harder than it was when we're all face to face. Just wonder if you got any insights on that, any thoughts on that, or as we come into a close, anything you haven't had the chance yet to contribute to the discussion that you'd like to add. I'll give you the choice.
No, I think I'll go back to your first question. And I do think, actually, I'm seeing a lot more openness and innovation that clients, and I think it's out of necessity. I think a lot of them realize they can't afford to continue doing what they're doing. They are a bit lost. And therefore, the only way is not to make big jumps, but to try something out in a smaller way, to innovate. And the city example is a great example. But equally, I think without that, they're going to lose employees, they're going to lose customers. So for me, actually, innovation has become easier just because there's more to lose by not doing it.
Actually, and I'd echo that, one thing we found at EY is that as we've been forced to move to a virtual form of collaboration platforms with our clients in the UK, it's allowed us now to do it on a global scale and include people from all around the world in that same sort of collaborative experience. So it's forced us to adapt, which I think has been really, really beneficial for us. In a moment, we're going to do a quick close out with a request for Q&A. Natalie, I'll come to you in 1 second, but I'll just draw the panel to a close, and I'll thank everybody for taking part in that, to Deviani, to Lynn, to Fabian, back to Joe for your excellent keynote at the start. Thanks everybody for participating. My personal takeaway from this session is that this is a new leadership challenge for us all, isn't it? It's a brand new leadership challenge. And to get this right, you need to keep your eyes and ears wide open. You've got to get to a much, much higher level of using EQ to be able to lead a more inclusive workplace than ever before. It's eminently doable, but it's absolutely the case that you've got to be wide open to and keeping a really close eye out to what's done, not done, what's said, what's not said. So thanks for that, guys. I've learned a lot through that panel. Really appreciate your time. Natalie, I think you want to just close out, do you, with taking some feedback. So are you going to voice this over, Natalie, or shall I encourage people just to contribute here? So I think it's self-evident, but it'd be really good to get some feedback from you on the quality of this event, and also the what we call the advocacy score in marketing terms, isn't it? Which is, how likely are you to recommend this lead network to a friend or colleague? If you could just take a moment to fill that out as we draw to a close. I guess, Natalie, will you just let that collect and then close out, or do you want me to draw it to a close? I think the answer to that is I should officially close.
I'm still collecting the
okay.
The results.
We'll just pause for a second.
Yes.